Welcome to the Alt Asset Allocation Podcast, exploring alternative investment opportunities available to the everyday investor. Here's your host, Ben Lakoff.
Good afternoon, Drew. Excited to have you on today. Wanted to start off just by getting a little bit more about your background and how you got into crypto.
Sure. Thanks, Ben. Yeah. And so my background, I'm Drew Austin, founder of Redbeard Ventures, co-founders of Knights of Degen and a few other projects. You know, I got into crypto. I've been investing in Bitcoin since 2013. Actually, I see my buddy Dan in the audience here. And we actually bought Bitcoin together in 2013. We met someone from, I think it was called, like, the website was localbitcoins.com, I believe. And there was, I had to meet the person in person. It was like a drug deal. Handed him some cash, scanned a barcode, a QR code. And the next thing I know, I had my first Bitcoin. So I've been in crypto since 2013. I bought my first NFTs like end of 18, early 19 from SuperRare. Started up Redbeard Ventures Syndicate, which is an angelist syndicate that accredited investors can join and can join to invest in other, you know, companies that I'm investing in. We started that about 15 months ago or so, maybe a year and a half ago. And we've done about 85 investments so far. So we've been super active. And I'd probably say we're one of the more active Web3 investors. And I'll kind of go through the portfolio and talk through things later. But started that about 18 months ago. Now I'm raising a fund. That's a Web3 focused fund. So that's really exciting stuff. And then I'm involved in, you know, I'm a co-founder of Knights of Degen, which is an amazing NFT project and community where we're building this like sports and media empire in the metaverse. And I'm really pumped about all the stuff that's going on there. We can talk about that. And then I'm a part of a bunch of DAOs. So we got a lot going on. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Indeed. And this is part of the joy of the crypto market, right? There's so many different, interesting, fascinating things. But man, 85 investments in 18 months. We're definitely going to get into that.
For sure.
And Knights of Degen and all the details. There's tons and tons to unpack there. But I wanted to start, and obviously right now this is being recorded the 2nd of March. So Ukraine, there's a lot of politics and macro. So trying to stay a little bit away from that if possible, but just start by giving an overview of the crypto market, where we are right now, and kind of then transitioning a little bit more into NFTs.
Yeah. I mean, so the comparison I like to make to where I see like the NFT Web3 space right now is I look at it as similar to where we were in crypto back years back. So if you think about crypto 2010 to 2018, we were speculating, we were investing in tokens and white papers and completely like kind of forward thinking and visions, but there was no real utility. Products were still being built. We were kind of like in that phase where we were speculating on, you know, which companies and products and ideas are going to be able to like kind of last the test of time and will sustain through a winter, et cetera. And, you know, what happened was the ICO bubble crashed. And from there, and then the shit companies died, the good companies built. And out of that then came DeFi. And DeFi brought utility to all those tokens and then white papers that we were speculating on and took the whole space to astronomical new heights. I actually see a very similar pattern and trend happening right now in Web3 in the NFT space with NFTs. And like since 2017, 18, you know, we've been speculating on different IP brands and different types of approaches and experiences and projects and trying to find those projects that'll stand the test of time. And, you know, I think that at some point there will be a winter, and I think that there'll probably be two kind of major moments that are going to be the drivers of taking NFTs to new heights and bringing true utility to the space. I think one will be the play-to-earn gaming movement, which we can, you know, go into in a bit, but I see that more 12 to 36 months out. I think the next 12 months are going to be a lot of shitty games coming into the market that we're going to have to dodge and weave. And then I think that from there, you know, I think that the true organic environment that will provide native utility to NFTs is an actual interactive and immersive metaverse. So when we're all putting on VR helmets, you know, going into the metaverse, Apple's built their VR helmet, has thrown their hat into the ring, and we're, you know, working, living, playing, socializing in the metaverse, that's when we're going to have true utility for these NFTs. And I think that's what's going to take that will be the NFTs DeFi moment. And I think that's going to take the whole space to new heights.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to unpack there. So I want to actually start with the metaverse. So I just listened to Lex Friedman's like 3-hour podcast with Mark Zuckerberg talking about Meta, which is, you know, previously Facebook, and his plan for the metaverse. But there's a lot of these crypto projects that have been talking about the metaverse now, with Apple and Facebook and Epic and every big company. What's your thesis on the metaverse? Is it open and more decentralized, or like, and how do those compete with these bigger, centralized, more well-funded companies like Facebook or Apple?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a role for different types of metaverses. I think there'll be niche metaverses. I think there'll be all types of things. My belief is that we are moving towards a decentralized economy, a decentralized world, and I believe in the open metaverse. But I do think that doesn't mean that there's going to be one winner per se. I think there will be various metaverses that provide different types of experiences. Like, for example, as an investor at Redbeard Ventures, like, I've invested in multiple different metaverses and have different thesis around, you know, each one. And I'll give you an example. Like, I'm an investor in Wilderworld. I believe Wilderworld is one of the most impressive open metaverse companies that I've ever seen, period. I think that I could picture myself in the future owning property, owning cars, having an office, you know, having meetings, having social events, and doing that in Wilderworld. So I'm definitely a believer in that being an open metaverse that is going to be a place where, you know, we can potentially live, work, and play. But I'm also an investor in Sandbox. And I think Sandbox has positioned themselves as one of that could be the leading gaming metaverse, where it really kind of helps us, it kind of bridges the gap between like the Minecraft world and social networking, and the ability to build this kind of like mini games within brands and properties and communities. So like I see Sandbox as being a major driver, because I also think gaming is going to be one of the major drivers, period, in Web3 of just adoption of users. But then, you know, there's also niche metaverses like Green Park Sports. We're an investor in Green Park. They have licenses with the NBA and MLB and NFL and MLS, etc. And like, that to me is going to be very interesting as a sports platform and a sports metaverse, and trying to take like fandom to the digital world. You know, we're investors in Superworld, which is taking which is an augmented reality layer on top of Google Earth. And to me, what I find fascinating about that one is specifically about how like physical events can have digital experiences in the metaverse. So like, is there going to be a way where through augmented reality that you are at a music festival and you can interact with whoever's owning that property in that specific land that you're standing in, you know, on Earth, and interact with the experiences and the content that that landowner has created. So there are a lot of different types of, I think, opportunities for metaverses to spring up and provide different types of unique experiences. But I do think that like at the end of the day, there will be like certain ones that will win in terms of social and work and all of that. And it's interesting to watch.
I do agree that it's not kind of a one person to win them all. There's a space for the Apple and Android, multiple different, more tailored versions for sure. When thinking about metaverse and all of these different niches within the NFT market, you know, my next question would be about what the NFT market is so broad, but what do you see as the most overhyped segment right now and why?
Well, I think play to earn gaming is going to be terribly overhyped for the next year. I think people are going to be throwing out shit games for the next 12 months and taking advantage of the vision of what play-to-earn gaming will ultimately be, but with like some really low-quality games. And I think that it's going to take us, you know, any good game developer will kind of tell you that it takes about 2 years to build a really quality game. And, you know, people have been working on play-to-earn games pretty much for the last 6 months or so. So, you know, I think that we're going to see a movement of, you know, a lot of games that people are going to feel there's going to be rugs, there's going to be, you know, poor experiences, there's going to be like, you know, there's going to be some challenges, I think, in the play to earn movement. But I think actually in the next 12 to 36 months is when we're going to see the game, the play to earn gaming economy reach incredibly new heights. And I also think there's fascinating resistance happening from the traditional gamer markets and gamer audience that will also be fascinating to see, you know, how they respond and how long it takes them to actually understand what's happening here. And that, you know, it's like, I find the fact that these traditional gaming audiences think that, you know, that the NFT market is out for, you know, taking their money and all of that stuff. I find it to be crazy, like so interesting and like kind of odd, because, you know, they really don't own anything in the gaming worlds they play in today. They buy all this stuff and they leave it in the game. But the NFT market and the NFT world promises like a new world of ownership and a way that you can actually take the assets that you've earned in games and bring them to new new environments or create utility outside of the gaming world altogether. So to me, I just think there's such a disconnect between traditional gaming audience and the Web3 kind of vision of gaming. And it's going to take a little while to build that bridge. And, you know, it's going to also, we're going to go through our bumps in the road because of that, because this year is going to show a lot of probably negative experiences with what play to earn can really bring. And so, but I think eventually as some of the quality game makers create games where you can actually earn within that economy and bring that out and participate in the real world, I think that's going to be a kind of driver of new users and new opportunities.
And yeah, definitely. And it's almost like a new Trojan horse for a whole new segment of people. But like you said, these games, real games that people love and care about, take a lot longer than we think to actually develop. So on the flip side of that, like, what segment of the NFT market are you most bullish on right now and why?
I think the, you know, personally, I'm a big believer in the DAO ecosystem. I think the DAO infrastructure, I think DAOs are going to be, I think this is going to be a pivotal year for DAOs. I think that DAOs are going to be the foundation of how we build businesses in this Web3 world. And I think the discovery process that we're all going through to create DAOs, to understand how to organize DAOs, how to, you know, think about earning in DAOs, and, you know, there's so much interesting how to think about treasury management and voting and participation and community involvement. I just think there's, you know, tokenomics, you know, like there's just so much to think through when it comes to DAO creation and DAO structure that to me, that's like what I'm really, really excited about this year is seeing how DAOs continue to evolve and progress and develop. I also think that, and I think it's one of the most exciting things I'm working on with Knights of DGen is thinking through our, you know, how our DAO will be structured and formed, et cetera. But the other thing I think is going to be, and it's, you know, it goes hand in hand, but the other thing that I'm really excited to look into and explore and learn a lot about, and I'm very excited to see how the Ape token kind of, how apes release their token is like, I think this year is also going to be a very big year for us to go from projects that have NFTs to projects that have NFTs and tokens. And I think the token economy of within NFT projects and communities is going to be really fascinating to see how that unfolds, how value accrues to different assets, how utilization of tokens can, you know, go beyond their kind of like internal community and game and go and reach new places outside of their own ecosystem. So, you know, this is a lot of what I'm thinking about for Knights of DGen, but also what I'm excited to learn about this year through iterations and people releasing and experimenting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a Packy McCormick article, It's Just Practice. And I think about this often because, you know, there are these tokens and DAOs and all of these new experiments going on, but ultimately this is not its final form, and this is all just kind of practice for the next stage and putting these things together in new unique ways. And the composable nature of crypto allows you to piece these things together in new ways that, yeah, it's going to be really exciting for sure. All right, so I'm curious, like, you're doing a lot of investing, talking to a lot of projects. What narrative do you hear within the NFT market constantly that you disagree with, besides, I guess, play to earn being the next thing in the next 3 months?
Mm-hmm. What do I disagree with, you're saying? Like, what's the common thing that people are saying I disagree with?
Exactly.
What do I disagree with? Give me an example. Tell me what you're thinking.
No, well, I mean, the play to earn being the next big thing that will be launching next month, because it does take, you know, at least 2 years to build a game that people love and care about. Mm-hmm. So this, like, the narrative is that, like, throw a blockchain on the gaming and it's going to be infinitely better and it'll be ready next week. Mm-hmm. So something like that, if there is anything that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think that part of it is, like, I'm a big believer ultimately, like, there, and this is part of the reason why I fell in love with Wilderworld, is, like, I'm a big believer in that all of this ends up leading to a more immersive virtual world. And I'm a VR guy. Like, there's AR, there's VR, you know, there's mixed reality. I happen to be on the VR team. I think that VR is the most transformative technology I've ever kind of experienced. And I think that when we talk about a true immersive metaverse, you know, a lot of the metaverses that are operating today are just not even close to thinking about VR, let alone building in for a VR world. And what I thought was really impressive about how Wilderworld is operating is that they're building for a VR first experience. And whether VR is there or not, they're not going to be like, they're not going to wait. They're going to keep building what they believe to be the appropriate and right environment for the type of experience that they want to deliver and offer to people. And that, to me, has just been, like, wildly impressive. So to me, I think that, you know, I think we're still a ways out from what we all envision to be a truly immersive metaverse. I think we're using the word probably a little early, but it's where we're headed. And then we have to build a foundation, and that's what we're doing today.
Nice. No, I love that. I mean, regulation is something that comes up as, like, a potential hurdle for the crypto space overall. If you could wave a magic wand and change a few things to help drive the space overall forward, what would it be in regards to regulation and why?
I mean, first thing I would do is I'd get rid of the accreditation laws. I think they're total bullshit. I think accreditation laws are, I think the funny thing is, I think the reason why a lot of NFT holders are so, like, so passionate, so excited about this space is that it's really the first time many of them can have vested interest in a business that they are participating in. You know, like, for example, like, you might, you know, like, there's just, like, whether it's, unless it's, like, a public company, which you've missed all of that early stage upside, you know, the reality is only accredited and qualified investors get the opportunity to invest in early stage venture businesses, which is the time when you actually move the needle. Like, I'm seeing people in this audience right now, like, I see a lot of them, like, I see Candyman, I see GWR, I see Jigga. Like, these are all people that came into our community, and, like, they affect the business. They make an impact on the business. They move the needle on what we're doing every day. And that's not something you do in a publicly traded company. So it's like, for me, I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow, this is the first time that many of these people, and whether or not they specifically are accredited or not is irrelevant. It's just at a broad scale, the fact that these people can participate, have vested interest, can move the needle and help grow the value. I mean, that's what I do for a living as an early stage VC. I'm trying to find great projects to invest my capital. And then I do everything I can to support those companies. I don't get paid extra. Just my return is I invest in this company and I want to see it succeed so I could get a return on my investment. And I think that a lot of these Web3 projects are, I think, unfortunately, we have to play a song and dance game and try to, you know, figure out how to maneuver in this world, because the SEC hasn't really come clear with what the hell is going on. And we're all trying to figure it out. And honestly, the people that are making out best as we all experiment trying to do a song and dance to figure out how we can participate, contribute, and earn in this new world in a decentralized economy, the lawyers are probably going to be the ones that make out best, because we're all running in circles trying to figure out what we can and cannot do.
Well said. I completely agree on a number of those points. That's for sure. So, talking about being a VC and making these early investments, 85 investments in 18 months, launching your next fund. I guess let's just start with the fund's investment thesis and what you aim to do differently there.
Yeah. I mean, so, like, I have a venture capital syndicate called Redbeard Ventures that is an Angelist syndicate. I think Angelist is our partner and they're our administrator for the syndicate and for the fund. And on the syndicate side, you know, we grew in the last 17, 18 months. We started with zero, you know, I started from zero and we grew to 2,700 LPs that are now, you know, following and backing. It's free to join and participate and to see the different deals. And we've had 2,700 people that have joined this kind of like venture community that we've created. And we've deployed about $40 million in capital, invested in over 80 companies. And the thesis for the syndicate has been frontier technology. So like, I've been on the cutting edge of tech. So I was early in the Google Glass space, building enterprise software on Google Glass, putting them on farmers and UPS drivers, et cetera. And over the past 6 years, I was working on an AI enterprise software platform that did recruitment process automation. We sold that company about a year ago. So I've been always kind of like pushing the boundaries of what technology can enable. And that's what a lot of this fund is about, that the syndicate is about frontier innovative technologies. We're investors and, you know, 75 to 80% of the deals we did this year were Web3 and blockchain, because to me, that was really the driver of what got me into this whole space, was I just was watching the internet get rebuilt before my very eyes and wanted to be a part of that. But, you know, from there, it was also, you know, we did space deals, we've done robotics deals, we've done kind of innovative fintech deals, we've done a lot of climate deals with, like, you know, lab-grown meats and things that we can do to, you know, kind of pump, you know, position society to be more efficient. So we've done some really fascinating deals, and that's what we are investing out of the syndicate. And then the fund will be a purely Web3, only Web3 blockchain fund, full stack Web3 fund, from consumer applications to infrastructure, DeFi, metaverse, and play to earn gaming. But, you know, we're looking across the market because I see a lot of intersection between, you know, those sectors and how they're coming together to form what this new internet is going to be all about.
Yeah, definitely. And the lines are always blurring between all of these segments. Are these all pre-seed investment sort of things, or will you have liquid tokens, NFTs, metaverse land, stuff like that?
Yeah, so the fund and the syndicate have been equities and tokens. You know, it's kind of run the gamut. We kind of focus between pre-seed and Series B, I'd say, has been our sweet spot. But it's equity and tokens. And then I'm queued up to be one of the first AngelList rolling funds that will allow for NFT asset investing. Because that's I think for me, it's a big, to be a productive investor in this space, I think you really need to come at it from a 360 degree view of how you're going to contribute value and how you're going to participate. And, you know, for us now we have the fund, we have a syndicate, and so the fund has a pure focus. The syndicate allows our investors to co-invest and double down on deals and take one later stage and earlier stage. There's really not many constraints on the syndicate side. We have a very broad thesis on that one. It's really opportunistic. And then the NFT rolling fund, which, you know, hopefully will roll out in the next few months, will be an NFT asset fund. So again, these are the ways that we're participating, you know, in with our companies and helping build out their ecosystems, et cetera. So, you know, I've been pretty active NFT collector and investor for the last 3 years, you know, from, you know, art, and I'm an investor in Super Rare, and that was the first NFT I ever purchased, was a piece of art on Super Rare. And, you know, that ended up becoming, you know, a couple of years later, ended up becoming my first ever Redbeard investment, was their seed in their A round, and then turned out like really wonderful for us, is like they tokenized, and, you know, now we're holding substantial investment in their token.
Awesome. And I mean, just talking about early stage investments in this market, crazy bull market, I'm seeing pre-seed investment opportunities at $150 million fully diluted valuation. Like, how do you think through valuations in a market like this?
Well, I think it's interesting. It's like, what we first need to do is kind of take a look at things through a new lens, because these are different types of businesses with different liquidity paths and different dilution paths. So I think the people that just kind of look at it as one-to-one, oh my God, the valuation on a traditional equity-based startup is so much lower and these blockchain import valuations are so high, I think there's more to this than meets the eye, and there's more, and we have to kind of look at it through a new lens. So I do think that the valuations are high. I do think that we're at a little, there are deals I see sometimes with the valuations that come through that are just astronomical and make really little sense to me. But, you know, there is also you know, substantial upside, which is, I know a lot of investors that can tell you, especially on the token side, these token, you know, the token market caps can get substantially high because they're broader, their use and their utility can be far broader than just the general like evaluation of a traditional company based on revenue or profits, et cetera. So a token utility can have a far greater market cap and have a far greater return on its investment as it grows and the utility grows. So to me, I think that there's, you know, new dynamics when it comes to understanding token valuations. I think too, there often is far less opportunities for dilution because they're not raising as many rounds and staying private for so long before they can have some type of liquidity event. And, you know, three is that the timeline to liquidity is far faster, you know, as opposed to waiting, you know, for 8 to 10 years till a company, you know, sells or goes public. A company might, you know, I might invest in an equity, and then within 2 years, they tokenize and decentralize their whole business. So the liquidity opportunities are actually far faster. So, you know, there's pros and cons. And I think you have to kind of understand, you know, for me, I think that although we have to be disciplined in how we think about valuations and making sure that we can always, you know, when I'm thinking about the fund, I'm looking for investments that can return the entire fund and have 50 to 100x outcomes. But, you know, we also need to consider the fact that the valuations might be different and we have to look at it through a new lens.
No, I think that's all very valid. I'm curious how you think about or hedge potential regulatory risks associated with investing in some of these early stage projects that are, you know, very much in regulatory gray area.
I mean, one of those things, it's tough. I mean, it's hard because it's so unknown. And it's either like a part of me either feels like either you're going to play or you're not going to play. You either want to watch and let it all unfold in front of you, or you're going to get your hands dirty and play. Now, that I guess the part of the hedge for me, and I get lucky in this kind of regard, is that I have investors in my fund and LPs in my fund that are really close to the ground on policymaking and dealing with the SEC and the government. So I don't want to name specific names per se, but it's like, you know, some of our investors are at the ground level of working with the SEC and trying to help to get them up to speed on what's going on in crypto and Web3 and how they can, you know, not really best support what we're doing. So, you know, I think, you know, there is a little bit of like this like disdain for anything that SEC or government involvement is. But I, you know, at the end of the day, their interests are to protect and to support a flourishing financial market. So I think that if they, you know, if we look at it from that lens, then hopefully we have the right people on the Web3 side of things that can help bridge the gap and make sure that they're up to speed and aligned and that on our end that we are aware of what's happening and informed and do our best to keep our, you know, ear to the ground so we know which way things are going.
No, that totally makes sense. Last one on kind of the VC fund. I'm curious your stance on Anon or pseudonymous founders and where you position yourself there.
And you know, founders that have revealed themselves and hold themselves accountable. I think the anonymous stuff is, it's rough. You know, like does that mean I won't invest? No, of course, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that I'm a very, you know, I try to stay open-minded and look at each situation differently. But, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think that there's usually, I've found most projects on the Web3 side of things, there's a lot more problems on the A9, on the anonymous side than there is on the, you know, kind of pseudonymous revealed side. And I was a big part of what we did with Knights of DJs. We were really passionate about saying, hey, let's put our names out there. Let's put ourselves attached to this because, like, we're, you know, if something goes right or wrong, you know who to point to. You can hold us accountable. And I think that's a really powerful concept that you could be held accountable for your performance, your production, and you know who to point to. And you can't just go and start another project just because like you had a bad day in this project. Like we got to build through the good times and the bad times and our reputations are aligned to it. And I think that's a powerful needle mover.
Yeah, good stuff. Good transition into Knights of Degen. So just overview what it is and why it's important and kind of roadmap a bit would be helpful.
Yeah, of course. Knights of Degen is, well, it's awesome. I mean, there's just so, it's such a, for me, it's such a it's such a cool thing to be involved in, because, you know, I've been a founder since I was 19 years old, and now all of a sudden I've moved on to the venture side and I'm a full-time investor. By being involved in Knights of Degen, I get to kind of have the best of both worlds, where I'm a builder and I'm a creator and an operator, and I work amongst a team every day, but I still, you know, there's so much overlap and value that it creates for my venture business. It allows me the flexibility to be able to say, hey, I can invest time in Knights of Degen and know that the return on my time there isn't just realized through Knights of Degen, but it's massively realized through our fund and our ability to invest in great companies and how we can support our portfolio companies and get access to great deals. So first and foremost is, like, it scratches many itches for me, if you will. Second thing is that, you know, what it is, Knights of Degen is a community of people that share a lot of the same interests at its start. You know, we're sports fans, we're NFT collectors, we're speculators, we invest in crypto, we invest in startups, we're risky in nature, but we share a lot of the same interests and passions, and that kind of brought us together. Sport, betting on sports and all these different things that really kind of, you know, get us excited to speculate on the things that we enjoy to do. And to put, you know, that's really kind of what we are, you know, there's, if you look at our Discord, just go through the channels in Discord, you'll really like kind of get a feel for what we're about, like, really quickly. I mean, you'll see there's a sneaker culture channel, and there's a trading sports car channel, and there's a VC channel, and there's a crypto token channel, and there's an NFT alpha channel, and there's basketball, boxing, fighting, like, soccer. I mean, our Discord really just kind of reflects the things that we're about and the things that we're interested in, the things that we want to talk about. So it starts at a foundational level with that community and those shared interests. And then from there, it's an amazing team. So, like, our team is really fucking capable. And I think that is, to me, one of the most underrated and powerful attributes of any NFT project, is the fact that a great team is, you know, we have a team that's really capable of being able to not only, like, push the boundaries and think creatively and experiment and have the courage to experiment, but also to execute and, you know, put our word out there and then go deliver. So I think that the team, you know, we have my partner, you know, Jared Augustine, who him and I kind of, like, came together and got the whole thing, you know, started. And then we brought an early founding team together of, you know, Blake Jamison on the art side of things and Mike O'Day. We brought on Jack Settleman. We have, you know, Clay Sutton, who's on the marketing side, and Brendan, Jared's brother, who's on the BD and partnership side. And, you know, we just have this, like, super, really, you know, Peter, our CTO, we just have, like, a real rock star team with amazing advisors who, like, aren't just advisors by name. Like, you know, we have Jerry Ferrara, him and I do a show in the Knights of Degen Media Network. And we have Cynthia Froiland, who does a show with Jack Settleman for the Knights of Degen for the, you know, the Media Network. We have Ja Rule, who does a whole bunch of stuff with us on physical events. And, you know, we have, you know, a bunch of professional athletes like Tiki Barber, who's working with us on our fan controlled football team. And, you know, so we have the ability to recruit the right talent to be able to take this project to blue chip and beyond levels. And we just, like, the first thing is, like, this isn't just a PFP project. You know, it's, like, it's so much more than that, which is what's so fascinating about it, is that it's this whole kind of, like, it's this whole community driven. I mean, we are, for all intents and purposes, we're as close to a DAO can be without it being ready to be a DAO. I mean, I'll go into details on what that means, but, you know, we are building a decentralized sports and entertainment brand that is web native and was born into Web3. So, you know, everything we think about is how to be a true Web3 company in this world, and how do we provide a platform for community participation, community contribution, and then ultimately community earnings is really what we ultimately want to achieve in our efforts here. And that's, like, our long-term and short-term and medium-term vision. That's, like, what we think about every day, is how do we build a company that's far greater than the core contributing team, but it's just as valuable and important are the community committees and teams that form to take some of these projects and initiatives and take them forward. And there's going to be a lot of opportunity for, and that's what we were about. Like, that's how I believe, that's what I think DAOs are about, is that they're a platform for people to contribute and earn. And that's why we're going to see a lot of really interesting things with tokens and a lot of really interesting things with DAOs. And, you know, we're building with that in mind. It's like every project we focus on and create, every venture we create, like, we don't look at it as like, oh shit, like, we can't handle it because we're too small of a team. We're like, no, we can do this. And we're going to tap into our community and we're going to find the best people in our community. And they're going to be part of our team as an extension of us. And we're going to go out and freaking execute. And that's kind of how we've been about.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think you're one of the rare operator and investors in the space. And so it's always nice to see that juggling of the both. So I'm curious, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently if you could do Knights of Degen over again? Or what, like, learnings do you have now that you wish you would have applied?
I mean, we've learned an absolute ton. But I think the learnings we've had is because we've went through the experience that we did. So, like, in saying what would we do differently, like, of course, like, do I want our price to be higher? Do I want the floor to be higher? Of course, you always want that. But I always think that, like, I say this all the time, I think we've built our, I think we built and we continue to build the most sustainable kind of price action, but also just like general foundation of a business that as people find out about our project, are going to think it's a no-brainer to be buying our NFTs. And I have zero doubt that we become a more valuable and higher price project as we grow. So, like, to me, it's like, it's not really about like what I do differently. I think we built an amazing team. So I have no, and our mint process was smooth as hell, thankfully to Peter, because he's an absolute badass. And our, you know, our community management, like I can't tell you, we got very lucky. Like, we have, like, you know, I see, I think Pizza's in the audience here, but like, we got really lucky. Like, we had some early, we got, like, I don't think we ever probably imagined how important community management and our Discord mods would be, et cetera. And we just got really lucky that some people gravitated to our vision and our brand early and then helped carry us and really took this to the next level, because, you know, we're going to make mistakes and we're comfortable with that. Like, we know that. And we try to be explicit about this, like, that we're in this for a long term. We're a marathon. We're not a sprint. We're going to experiment. And if shit doesn't work, then we'll throw it away and try the next thing. Like, we're not going anywhere because we try an idea and it doesn't work. That's just not, in this world where there's so much green field, experimentation should be celebrated more than ever before. So I'm a huge believer in the fact that, like, I tell our team this all the time. I'm like, yo, let's go out. Let's swing for the fucking fences. Let's take some shots. If it doesn't work, big fucking deal. We'll go out and we'll throw it away. We'll have learned and we'll come back and we'll try something else. So I think this is a process of learning and discovery that is really critical. And the faster you can experiment, the faster you can learn, the better. So it's funny, like, it's like, I'm like, I, it's like weird to think back on this all and say, like, I'm not sure what I would do differently. I'm sure, like, there's people in the audience, GWR will tell me a few things I could do differently, but
there's always somebody that will. No, that's true.
I see him in the audience and there's a few people in here that'll tell me a few things that we should have done differently, but, like, our community holds us accountable. You know what I mean? They do. And they have passion. I'd rather have a passionate community that gives us their opinions every day than a community that doesn't give a shit, like, without a doubt. So for me, I think that, like, it's not really about what we do differently. It's like, kind of like, what are we learning every day and how do we continue to grow? And I think the biggest learning and the biggest like advice that I could share is just how important and how valuable it is to have a really strong community strategy. Cause to me, that's what it's all about. That's everything. So for me, that's the biggest learning, is that we build everything with the community in mind and we try to keep the community involved as much as possible without it being a friction or a delay to our ability to go out and build this business. So any opportunity we have to incorporate either the community council, which is, I can tell you about that in a minute, but like the community council, who's like literally, the community council is like part of our Slack. Like straight up, like we have an entire community group that were elected officials of our community that represent the community and are the voice of the community and are not part of our core contributor team, that have a dedicated channel for them in our Slack that so we can communicate in real time about the business activities, because we want them to be abreast of things as much as possible. So like, you know, that's I think getting the community involved, building out projects that they can actually contribute to and be a part of, and really have vested skin in the game on this venture, I think is so critical.
Yeah, and I think that's like an internal battle of trying to find the balance between including the entire group and getting everybody's thoughts and opinions and stuff versus, you know, a smaller, more centralized, we're going this way week because we need to move fast. So that's an eternal struggle, that's for sure. Speaking of internal struggle, I'm curious how you manage your time between Discord and Telegram and all the different channels, 85 different investments, and Knights of Degen having such a robust Discord. Hopefully you have some sort of productivity hack, you know, asking for a friend.
Yeah, of course. I mean, first is build great teams around you. So like, I'm a big believer in building infrastructure to support your ability to scale. So, you know, we have great, I partner and I hire and I work with really great people that can enable us to, you know, that can enable me to do what I do best and not get bogged down in the shit that I just shouldn't be dealing with and shit that I shouldn't be spending time on. So that's first and foremost, it comes down to team. Second is like, I happen to be in this world where almost everything I do overlaps, which is amazing for me because it allows my hobbies and my passions and my fun time, my downtime is still contributing to all the shit that I do for a living. So like, you know, like if I'm watching a Knick game, I end up doing a podcast about it with Jerry Ferrara, or if I'm going to spending a day watching football, I talk in Discord with my community. Or if I'm going to invest in Wilder World, I make sure that Knights of Degen is the first tavern, the first piece of commercial land ever released in that ecosystem. You know, we're investors in Sandbox, and Knights of Degen is building out a play-to-earn kingdom in Sandbox. And like, that allows us to find so much overlap in the things that I'm doing that the way I see it is I've built these like platforms that enabled me to support my portfolio at scale. So, you know, I'm part of a DAO that, you know, we created that's called Meta Collective, which is like 25 investors. We own 30 investors, 25 pieces of land, all connected right by the Bored Ape Yacht Club in Sandbox. And it's a DAO that's basically with the vision of creating a college campus lifestyle in the metaverse, like a true campus in the metaverse. And I'm really excited about it. It's an amazing group of people involved. But I do that and I do these things because A, I want to understand what it takes to build in real estate in the metaverse and find out where the gaps are, where are the opportunities, what type of technology is going to be needed. You know, what is it like to procure real estate in the metaverse? Like, how can I prove to take this campus and create space and opportunities for my portfolio companies to be able to have representation and a presence in virtual world? So like, all of these things to me connect the dots to be able to build this kind of like this ecosystem. And that's the kind of way I think about it, is like, think about it from an ecosystem perspective and then build platforms that give you leverage to be able to support more things at scale and have great teams in place that enable you to do what you do best and not waste time.
Where can people find out more about you, your fund, Knights of Degen? Where would you like to send people?
Yeah, I mean, Knights of Degen, you can find us at Knights of Degen on Twitter, on OpenSea. You know, you can find our project at Knights of Degen. It's an amazing NFT project. And it's an amazing Discord. And, you know, go to our Twitter handle and you'll see all the links and everything you need to find there. But definitely check it out. Redbeard.ventures is my AngelList syndicate, and that'll take you everything else. That's where I live on AngelList. And you can find me on Twitter at Drew Austin, which you can just click a button right now in front of you and see that. But yeah, I mean, that's where I spend my time. I'm on Twitter. I'm in all the different messaging channels and platforms, etc. But I would definitely check out the Knights of Degen Discord and check out redbeard.ventures on the AngelList syndicate side.
Awesome. Well, excited to have you on today. Really appreciate it. And yeah, looking forward to watching you grow and expand. It's been awesome.
There you have it. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate your support. Show notes, transcript, links, and more can be found on our website at altassetallocation.com. If you'd be so kind, please share this with anyone you think might be interested or get some value from this conversation. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out. I'm always happy to hear them. Lastly, if you're on YouTube, please like the video or subscribe to the channel. If you're listening to the audio version of this, please subscribe to the podcast and or leave a review. This really helps more people find the podcast, and I really appreciate it. Thanks again, and hope you have a fantastic day. Happy investing.